Hi, this is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I'm talking to Judith Avila, the author with Chester Nez of Code Talker, the first and only memoir by one of the original Navajo Code Talkers of World War II. Hello, Judith.
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Thank you. Me too. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes. Code Talker, as you know, was such a significant and important book. It still is. And when One Book, One Community chose it to be the book of the year, it drew a crowd. When you and Chester came to speak at the Henderson, the crowd was bigger than any crowd we've ever had there.
Wow, I hadn't known that. Oh, that's good to hear. I know people always love to see Chester.
Yes.
And he really got a kick out of people coming to see him, too. He kept telling me, I didn't do anything all that special. Lots of other guys did just as much, but I knew he secretly got a kick out of it.
I'm sure he did. And he brought attention to the other Code Talkers, too. In fact, the book taught many people about Code Talkers who had never heard of them before.
Yeah, I think it has, and I'm happy for that. I really feel like it's such an important thing that we appreciate what the Navajo Code Talkers did for their country, even at a time when they weren't allowed to vote.
Exactly.
It was kind of crazy. They were warriors, and they were going to protect the country regardless of the way they were treated. And it made a huge difference.
That's right. It did. Why don't you just give us a quick synopsis of Code Talker, the first and only memoir by one of the original Navajo Code Talkers of World War II.
Basically, this memoir is Chester's life. And it's quite an incredible life and very much like the lives of the other young men who grew up on the Navajo reservation and ended up being Code Talkers. He raised sheep with his grandmother. He walked maybe 15, 20 miles a day as a five-year-old, taking care of the sheep, fixing fences, doing whatever needed to be done. And he grew up being responsible. And I think that's a lot of what made these men so strong and such perfect Code Talker material. So I try to illustrate that in the book. We talk about his growing up years, his going to boarding school, and we also talk at some length about his war years. And definitely, we give a lot of attention to the development of the code, and we also include the whole Navajo code, which is the only unbroken spoken code in modern warfare, at the back of the book. So we tried to cover whatever bases we could comfortably cover. We tried to cover the war and the Navajo culture. And I think it was quite a success because I've heard from so many people that it was their favorite book.
Oh, yes.
Or one of their favorites.
Well, I think it definitely still stands as our community's best one book read.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes, and Chester was such a sweetheart. I enjoyed having dinner with him.
Wasn't he the greatest?
Yes, he was. I'm so glad that he got to... Yes, I bet you do. I'm so glad that the book and his... Didn't he get an honorary degree then before he passed?
Yes, actually, it wasn't even an honorary degree. He had gone to the University of Kansas in Lawrence, Kansas. And because of the book, we got to meet the governor of Kansas and have dinner at his house. And as we were leaving, the governor asked us, if there's anything we can ever do for you, please let me know. And Chester's grandson, Latham, who is not shy, said, well, sir, you know, there really is something. My grandfather got close to getting his degree here, but he had to quit because he ran out of GI Bill money. And I think it'd be great if he could get his degree. And the governor, within a couple months, had accomplished that. Actually, he assigned his wife, Mary Brownback, to take care of that. And she did. And they gave Chester credit for preserving the history of the war and for defending his country, and actually gave him a real degree. It wasn't an honorary degree.
That's
it was
great.
His degree earned.
He did earn it, yes. Oh, that's a wonderful
yes.
story. Why don't you go
he
ahead?
He loved it.
Yes, I bet he did. I could see.
The first thing he said when they handed it to him was, I finally got my sheepskin.
And how old was he at that time?
Let me think. I think he was 91.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for him. Do you want to go ahead and read a little bit from Code Talker for us?
Sure. I'd be happy to. Chapter 1, Guadalcanal Invasion, November 4th, 1942, approaching Guadalcanal. Nothing ever dried. My damp combat uniform chafed at the back of my neck. Water ran down my forehead and into my eyes. A trickle meandered down my back as I stood on deck in the dark. The railing of the transport ship dripped with rain, but in the tropical climate, its wet surface was warm to the touch. The ship rolled slightly in the South Pacific waters, a constant, unsettling movement that just weeks ago would have made me queasy, but my stomach held steady. Born to the Navajo Nation, now a Marine, Private First Class Chester Nez, I'd never even seen the ocean before enlisting. It was good, being able to sail without feeling squeamish. I tried to concentrate on that and not on where I was heading, but thoughts seeped into my brain like seawater. Like other traditional Navajos, I'd always believed in the right way. Balance must be found, not only between individuals, but between each person and his world. My hands gripped the rail. The ship's steady progress brought me inexorably closer to Guadalcanal. For 3 months, battle had raged there. How could I find any balance in that? I reminded myself that my Navajo people had always been warriors, protectors. In that, there was honor. I would concentrate on being a warrior and on protecting my homeland. Within hours, whether in harmony with this world or not, I knew I would join my fellow Marines in the fight. Below decks, machine guns, earth movers, and other heavy equipment filled the ship's belly. The items we were likely to need first had been packed last so that they would be easily accessible upon landing. Aircraft carriers had preceded our troop ships, carrying dive bombers to blast Guadalcanal's beach prior to the Marine landing. The transport ship I sailed upon was accompanied by destroyers, cruisers, battleships, and additional transports. We 13 Code Talkers traveling with the fleet were late arriving members of General Vandegrift's 1st Marine Division. Several regiments of the 2nd Marine Division sailed with us in the transport ship. Our briefing had told us that the capture of Guadalcanal, an island in the Solomon Chain off the northeast coast of Australia, was the first stepping stone to an eventual attack on Japan. At Guadalcanal, the Japanese enemy waited. I could have stayed in high school, I thought. Maybe I should have. But as a warrior, how could I ignore the fact that my country had been attacked? I'd volunteered for the Marines just 7 months before, in April 1942, only a few months after the Japanese strike against Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. Until joining up, I'd never left Navajo land except for a few hours en route to boarding school. My wiry frame barely met the Marine's minimum weight requirement of 122 pounds, but I knew I was strong. I straightened and shoved trembling hands into my pockets. I was a man now. The ship would not reach Guadalcanal for a couple of hours. I walked below several levels to the mess hall, where the taut faces of the other 12 co-talkers aboard ship greeted me. We lined up and joked with the guys who were serving our meal, asking them to give us plenty of chow. Sometimes we got slabs of steak too big for a dinner plate. We placed our trays loaded with sausage, corned beef, steak, and scrambled eggs on a long, narrow counter and stood to eat. Every time the ship pitched or rolled, the trays slid, moving from one guy to the next and back again. We'd wait for our own tray to slide back, then resume eating. I can do this, I thought, back on deck. I pinched some corn pollen from my medicine bag, touched my tongue, my head, and gestured to the east, south, west, and north, then tucked the bag back into the pants pocket of my fatigues. I walked off by myself. One of my buddies called my name, but I kept walking, pretending not to hear. I thought about my father and grandparents, my younger sister, Dora. I pictured the dazzling sun of New Mexico and wished I could feel its dry warmth baking my skin. I thought of the air there, so pure and clear. I whispered a prayer of beauty. In beauty, all is made whole. In beauty, all is restored. I thought about what I was to face, wondering whether I'd be one of the men to die. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, November 4th, 1942, the most terrifying day of my life.
I remember when we talked about this, you told me how it was written. It's in first person, but it was transcribed by you. How did that work?
Well, I recorded all of Chester's stories and over a period of about 3 years.
Okay.
And then I listened to them over and over and over. The actual words are not all his. Mm-hmm. All the events and everything are his. But some of the words are my own because he was so humble. He'd just say things like, yes, I was scared. And I say, well, how did it feel? Well, you know, nervous. Okay, well, was it like a lump in your stomach? Yeah, a lump in my stomach. So we'd work on things like that to make sure he agreed with everything. Mm-hmm. But the actual words on the paper were mine. And the history, the research and stuff was mine. But it was first person because he and I wanted it to be him telling his story. So we read the whole book together at least 4 times to make sure that I got all of his feelings right, all of the events right, and that I represented him as he thought about things. And I sure hope I did do it correctly. I mean, I tried really hard, and so did he, to make it completely accurate.
Now, that's so difficult anyway to write a book, but to co-write it like that was really challenging, but you did a wonderful job.
Oh, thank you, Tracy. I worried about somehow not doing Chester justice. I think that was my biggest worry.
Right.
And I tried very hard to make people who read the book love him as much as I did.
Oh, and we did. That's for sure.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good.
And
I'm glad. He was such a good man.
He was. And you, evidently other people did too, because you won the New Mexico Press Women's Zia Award, New Mexico Arizona
yes.
Book Award, and of course, like I said, the One Book, One Community Choice.
Yes, and that was wonderful. And I was also chosen, our book was also chosen for an Audible Daily Deal.
Oh.
And we were read on air on NPR Radio.
that's really a lot of kudos for the book, and it deserves that.
Thank you. Wow, what a way to start out, you know, with your first book.
Right.
It's going to be a very hard act to follow.
But you're writing, on your website, you have several other starts of books there.
Yes, I do. I have published the first chapter of, I think 5 novels that I've written, but these novels are not yet published. I'm still looking for an agent and the right publisher, and unfortunately, it's an extremely slow process.
It is.
But I am determined, so it will happen.
And that's what you keep doing. That's one thing I've learned, is once you've written a book, that's only half of the job.
Yes, you're right. It's the fun part,
exactly.
For me anyway. I love to write. I'm not so gung-ho about trying to get things published, trying to find an agent, and so on.
But you will.
Yep, I know I will. Thank you.
Yes. So what... You told us a little bit about the writing of Code Talker, but what was the writing process? You listened to the tape. Did you write every day? Was this a real concentrated effort, or how did that go?
It was interspersed because at the time I had an agent for one of my novels, and she wanted lots of changes made to the novel. So I went back and forth. But what I would do when I was going to write is I would listen to several segments of Chester's recordings because I wanted my head to be inside his head, kind of, or vice versa.
Right.
You know, I wanted to use words he would use. I wanted to be sure I was true to his voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I always started out listening to his recordings.
That's great. And I think you captured his voice really well.
Thank you.
So what are you working on now?
Well, it's called The President Must Die.
Oh.
It's a novel.
I like it.
And it's about a president whose name is Krude, K-R-U-D-E.
Okay.
Who is not our current president, so I'm not referring to our current president. However, there are similarities that people might notice. And it's really been a cathartic thing to write because I find I'm watching the news so much more than I want to.
Right.
It's kind of like watching a cold snake. You know, you're mesmerized.
Yes.
And this is a catharsis to be able to write about the same kinds of things that are happening now, but to have it be fiction. And to have it end in the way I want it to end, which, of course, I won't tell anyone yet.
Right. Oh, I like that. And when do you expect to be finished with that?
Well, I'm about halfway through, and I've been working on it for a few months. So I think it'll be a couple more months before I'm finished.
Great. Good. That sounds like a great project. And like you said, cathartic.
Yeah. It is cathartic. Yes, it's been helping my frustration level, I have to admit.
So I know that you also, even after Chester has passed, give talks and discussions, lead discussions about the Code Talker and Chester. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I give a lot of talks, and myself and Chester's grandson, Latham Nez, who is my partner, and I met him through interviewing Chester. We've gone to Juneau, Alaska. We've gone to New Hampshire. We've gone all kinds of interesting places and given talks. And, of course, we go around New Mexico a lot, too. I do work as a Chautauquan for the New Mexico Humanities Association. So I give talks through them as well. Do have a website, Judith Avila, A-V like Victor, ILA.com.
And people can find where to find the book and also how to contact you through that webpage, right?
Yes, there are direct links from the website to Amazon, And the book is really pretty much at any bookseller. They have, although it came out in 2011, they're still selling it, and it's still a bestseller. So I think it's going to be in most bookstores for quite a while. I hope so, because I want everyone to know this history.
Right. It's an important book, and it's an important history for people to know. I know that I was a professor at the time of the book came out, and so many of my students, Navajo students, had no idea that relatives of theirs had been code talkers and how important being a code talker was.
Wow, that's something. I'm surprised to learn that they didn't know that their relatives had been code talkers. That's, wow. I hope we've helped them discover some of the deeper meaning in their roots then. That's great.
I did. I saw several ahas in my classes when these students realized this. So it did change lives. I personally
Good.
Can attest to that, yes.
It sure changed mine. I mean, I learned so much from Chester, and I respect the Navajo culture and their connection to nature so much. It has really changed my way of looking at the world.
How did you meet Chester?
I was a member of an organization that's a wonderful group called Southwest Writers.
Yes.
And there was a man there whom I did not know, but he had a network of friends, and he met Chester, and he sent an email out to his friends and said, wow, I'm in the middle of another book, but this man is fascinating. Maybe one of you would like to contact him and write about him. Well, none of his friends responded, but one of them forwarded his email to me, and I just jumped at the chance. I would have been fascinated by the little bit that I knew about the code talkers, and I really wanted to learn more and to learn it from someone who had actually been there, designed the code, and proved that it worked was just beyond my wildest dreams. So I called, I talked to his son, Mike, and I brought Chester and Mike to lunch, and we sat and talked for hours.
Oh.
And I asked them if they would allow me to tell the story. And I said, you know, everyone involved in this story is getting older and older. And if we don't tell it, I'm afraid it could be lost.
Right.
And they agreed.
Right. It seems like every week now we're losing another code talker.
I know there are supposedly only 4 left.
Oh, dear.
And they're the men who followed in Chester's footsteps. The originals, well, Chester was the last of the original 29 men, and he died in 2014, June 4th.
And he, with the other 28, created the code, correct?
He did, yes. And there were 3 more, and some believe 4 more Navajo men who had been Marines for a while who also helped in developing the code. But I think the reason the 29 men got so much credit for being the original code talkers is because they actually volunteered out of high school for a mission that they didn't even know what it was going to be.
Real heroes.
I know. It's such a great story. You couldn't make up a better story.
Absolutely. Well, I'm so glad you were there to tell the story in such a wonderful way. It sounds like it was.
Oh, thank you, Tracy. Boy, I'm glad too. The highlight of my life, I think, being able to tell this story.
I know. It goes pretty good.
I think the main thing I always like to say in an interview is that the Navajo code, many people have said to me, well, what's the big deal? They just spoke Navajo. You know, they didn't have to do anything special. And that wasn't the case at all. The Navajo code was an actual code that was based on English and Navajo, and not even other Navajos could decipher it if they were not code talkers. So it really was a big deal.
It was, and you have the code in the back of the book, and that shows how complex it was.
Yeah, it really was. It's 20, 25 pages of code words, and they're all logical and they all make sense when you go through it. I had the best time going through it with Chester, and we even found a couple of errors that we corrected because he said, well, you know, the Navy got it a little wrong when they released the code.
Wow. I want to thank you again for writing the book and for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Tracy. It's been a pleasure, and it's good to hear from you.
And that was Judith Avila, co-writer of Code Talker, the first and only memoir by one of the original Navajo code talkers of World War II. This is Tracy Hales Vass, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.